welcome back to another special episode of the Epic Experiment Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce, and I'm joined on the line by Lux. Lux, how are you now?
And I'm doing good.
So I have to say, through most of this pandemic stuff, I looked at your country and I thought, geez, what's going on in the United States of America that things are going so wrong? But now, sitting here, as you guys are getting vaccinated and you're slowly like having things go back to normal, and here in Canada, we're a mess. Like, we're not even close to being anywhere like close in the same stratosphere as you guys. You know what they just announced today? That all schools in the province of Ontario are going back to virtual learning and are locked down out of school. Like, because the case counts have been just climbing and climbing and climbing. And now our hospitals are so overloaded that we can't function. So, yeah. So we're locked back down. And not just locked down, but schools are out. And like, yeah, it's a mess. And as a dad... it's a problem.
And like, seriously, what's up with this complete 180 all these countries are doing?
I don't know, man. Like, I mean, I thought we were really good at like sort of like the early stages of like being locked down, but like as we've been stretched out like for, you know, a year plus, like we're obviously not able to do this, and our people are cracking under the pressure. Add in the fact that like more and more people are being upset by the idea of like having yet another lockdown. So like in the province of Quebec, I don't know if you caught on the news, Montreal had a riot last night because the premier there imposed a curfew of 8 p.m. And so people didn't take kindly to it and they took to the streets. So it's very interesting to say the least, is all I'm going to say there. I'll just leave it at that. Very interesting. So otherwise, how you been?
And I've been doing all right. You know, yesterday I had a little bit of an incident on Twitch where this one guy I was watching ended up spoiling some of an upcoming movie I've been waiting to see.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, that stinks. Oh, well. Hopefully it's not too bad. Do you still want to see the movie at least?
And I do. Basically, what happened was... Somehow he got his hands on some recorded footage of the movie and decided to air it.
Oh, no. That's got to be against the terms of service.
Oh, like, I'm pretty sure he's about to get banned.
Oh, probably. You can't do that. You can't air bootleg versions of movies on Twitch. Like, there's a cop. Like, if they're going to, like chase people's videos off of Twitch because they've used copyrighted music, I am sure that they are going to track down that and run it off the air, because you can't do that. That's garbage. Anyway. Well, yeah. Anyway. Now, folks, just so that everybody's aware, we're going to be bringing on our favorite judge, Judge Chris, to join us for our segment two. Because this week is our episode where we are going to be delving into all of the rules, questions, and tribulations associated with Strixhaven. And what better way to tackle that than with the help of a judge. So Judge Chris will be joining us for segment two. That'll be exciting when we get to that. Don't forget, folks, if you like the content here on the show, you like what we do each and every week, be sure to check us out on thelotuscouncil.com. That means you can find the podcast. That means you can find... Twitch stream is on lotuscouncil.com. I know over the weekend, also known as Sebastian, was opening up some really sweet product on camera. So, you know, check that out. They also have EDH gameplay or arena gameplay or, lots of other cool things going on. You also have, a very active and very positive Discord with lots of great people who love to talk MTG and love to talk EDH in particular. So come and check out their Discord. It's probably the highlight of the channel, of the website. Come and check it out. You will be very appreciative. Lots of good people and lots of good things to say. And it's overwhelmingly one of the more supportive Discords that I have encountered in my wanderings in this last couple of years. Lux, would you agree the Discord has been really good for the Lowe's Council?
Yep. Oh, and by the way, speaking of WoW opening up product, did you see the giveaway he did a few days ago?
Oh, did I hear it was a Tarmogoyf? Was it a Goyf?
Yep.
Sweet. Now, I got to ask, Lux, did you win it?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you won a Goyf?
Yep.
Dude, nice. That'll be fun. At least it went to the right person. Well, yep. All right, folks, so if we can all agree, if someone's going to win a Goyf, it's got to be someone who appreciates green. And I don't think anybody appreciates green more than our friend Lux here. So well done, Lux. Congratulations on the Goyf. That'll be exciting when it lands. Be sure to put a photo.
I definitely will.
And tweet that noise out, because that's exciting. Good for you, my friend. Well earned. I think you've earned that one. Good for you. But yeah, if you like interesting things happening in the Discord and with lotuscouncil.com, come and check them out. There's lots more happening, so don't miss it out. Also, folks, we have a giveaway that's going on for a little bit longer. This time we'll be giving away a booster pack of Mystery Booster, and I've got it right here in my hand. It is unopened. It is a sealed pack of Mystery Booster goodness, and we're going to be giving it away to one lucky winner. So, but if you want to hear how to enter, please stick around to the end of the show to find out how you too can be entered to win. So tonight, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be diving into Garbage or Great with Lux, and then a quick discussion around some of our thoughts around Strixhaven, and then we'll move to segment two, and we'll bring in Judge Chris, and that will be we'll have Judge Chris help us out understanding all those more intricate parts of the game for what Strixhaven brings. All right. So let's go to segment one, and our Garbage or Great tonight is a new card from the Commander 21 product called Nils, Discipline Enforcer, which for two and a white, you get a 2/2 legendary creature, human cleric. Cleric may be a relevant ability here, but let's keep going. At the beginning of your end step, for each player, put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target creature that player controls. Each creature with one or more counters on it can't attack you or a planeswalker you control unless its controller pays X or X the number of counters on that creature. So, Lux, is this garbage or is this great?
And honestly, I'll let you give your opinion before I hand off mine.
All right, so here's my thought on this. I think it's probably fairly weak on the whole. I find it an interesting effect. All right. So Orzhov Advocist does something similar where players can then elect to put counters on their creatures, but a creature that gets a counter from Orzhov Advocist can't attack you or planeswalkers you control. So Nils, Discipline Enforcer, has a similar effect, but it's a little more pillow forty and a little bit less of a sure bet. So I find it interesting, and I might run it in my deck just because of the interesting political nature of the ability. Like, so there might be some negotiating in terms of like, I will put that plus one counter on that really important creature you need. I will put it on that other one if you do this for me. Like, there's an interesting some interesting negotiations and interplay there that could be negotiated into where are you going to put that +1/+1 counter. Then each creature with one or more counters on it can't attack you or a planeswalker you control unless the controller pays X, where X is the number of counters on that creature, could be a particularly impactful line if you're playing a deck, playing against a deck that has got a lot of +1/+1 counters synergies going on. So if you're playing like that Simic Evolve deck, or you're playing an Abzan counters deck, you could very easily run a situation where you put that counter on their biggest thing, and now they really can't attack unless they pay a lot of their mana. So it's an interesting ability. I don't think it's particularly good. I think that many people, when they open up the Silverquill Statement deck, they're going to remove Nils and they're going to put something that's got a little more bite to it. Because a 3-mana 2/2 with some measure of useful like abilities is going to get some play, but I don't think it's going to be a lot. I mean, it is nice. You probably get the ability before the end of your turn because it says it's templated at the beginning of your end step, but I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's going to be relevant enough. I think people are going to cut it and put it in other things. So I suspect it's probably going to be viewed as garbage, even though it is a really interesting design space. Lux, what your thoughts?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's not complete garbage, because it could have some uses, but it's still pretty weak, and there's better substitutes.
Yeah, I think you're going to find a lot of substitutes, and I think that, if you're putting this in a +1/+1 counter deck, you're putting this probably like a green-white or Abzan-colored +1/+1 counter deck. The Pell affordability is good. Now, I did notice it is a cleric, so it could go in Aura, the new cleric carrying commander from Zendikar Rising, which is another, interesting sort of application for it. But yeah, I just think it lacks a little bit on impact. And if you draw this in the late game, you're going to be oh, did I have to? Because this is going to be, there's no way for it to sort of snowball to the point where, this is good. This gets good when you can have it out on turn 2 or 3 and make good use of it. But if you can't, it's a dud and you don't want it. So, it's interesting. It's an interesting card, interesting abilities, but I'm not convinced that it's going to be impactful enough. So I think it's going to be cut and people are going to view it as garbage, even though I think it's interesting. All right. Any last notes about Nils?
Yeah, not really.
No, okay. So which I guess brings us to the more generalized conversation around Strixhaven. Lux, what have you been thoughts? Like, we've seen all the previews now. So what do we think of the set? Did it live up to the hype? Are you wishing there was more to be found? What do you think?
And honestly, you remember how we were saying that Prismari was going to be the most powerful of the five?
Yes, I remember saying that. I think I'm now incorrect, but...
I think, honestly, from what I've seen, I think Witherbloom's the best.
I would agree. I think of the five, I think Witherbloom is the one that's got the most obvious direction that you're going to want to take, materials you get and put it immediately into play. I think Prismari ends up feeling very much like just more Izzet decks and with a lot of interchangeable parts. And I think the other knock on the Prismari stuff is that some of it's really expensive. Kind of like the Prismari got that funky ability where you get this really expensive spell, or you can pay, blue-blue or red-red and make a treasure token. And I'm like, really? You're going to spend that much on a treasure token? I don't know. You get this, these really powerful effects. I'm looking for one now that's got it, sort of stapled to it. Oh, geez. Where is it? No, not Maelstrom Muse. Magma Opus. It's this ability where you have this 8-mana monstrosity of a spell, or you can turf it and make a treasure token. And I'm like, really? It's a mythic. What, I'm turning my mythic into treasure tokens? That doesn't seem like a very good exchange. And I feel like there's sort of a lot of this sort of stuff that goes on with Prismari. And I'm like, I'm kind of been owned by the Prismari, just despite the fact that there are some cards that are obviously crazy pants. But what did you think they did to Lore? How do you think they did with Lorehold?
And honestly, it actually lived up to the expectations that, it seems like a breath of fresh air from usual Boros.
Yeah, it does. It feels very different. I really like it. It's just a very interesting and different dynamic with which to take red and white as a color combination. Now, it's still, I feel like there's still a pretty good aggressive bent to it, which is nice and it still exists. But if you don't want to play, you know, Red White Soldiers with equipment, you can now play Lorehold and play, you know, some of the artifact recursion and sort of interesting cards that they've got in this set here to make things really interesting. So, no, I like what they've done to Lorehold to make it an engaging and different feeling color combination. I really like it. So, yeah, no, I'm a big fan. Big, big fan. What about Quandrix? What do you think? Did they do anything that impressed you? Or did you feel like they were, you know, a pretty much kind of underwhelming?
And honestly, no, they went the route we and they suspected they'd go with, and like it's basically Simic 2.0.
Well, yes and no. Like, there's definitely quite a bit of the plus one plus counter synergies. But you also get these fractals, like, so you get like a token sort of feel to it too. Like, with if it's just Simic, it would just be creatures plus and then plus one plus counters, right? Like, you play Shamble Sharks and Experiment Ones and Elusive Crises. But like Quandrix doesn't quite go that far. It gets like the fractals involved. It's interesting. And then it feels like it's a little more tricky in the sense like it wants to like mess with the power and toughness of creatures in combat and turn them into like other things. So, because I mean, I guess that's the commander product where there's like that the octopus that makes 8/8 tokens or like turns a creature into an 8/8, or you get, you know, like creatures turn into 4/4s. Like, there's a lot of that sort of almost transmogrifying or like, yeah, temporarily changing things into. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'm not in love with it. I want to see what it does. But yeah, it's not quite fractals, but it feels pretty similar to some of the Simic stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I still can't get over the Body of Research card that we saw last weekend, last week that was kind of insanity. Really, like there's no other way to put it. And I'm really kind of disappointed that Jadzi, Oracle of Archivios is like the big mythic for the color combination. Because like on one side you get an 8-mana 5/5, and on the other you get an almost unplayable sorcery spell. Like that's how I view it. It feels like Journey to the Oracle is like an almost unplayable mana card. Like, how many times are you gonna draw this and have a mitt full of hand, like land in your hand that you're gonna want to put on the table? Anyway,
and not often enough for it to work.
No, so you're not gonna make it a priority, and so then you're stuck with this 6-mana 8/8 that has no way to reduce the cost reduction on your spell, and like, yeah, it protects itself, which is gonna be a nightmare to try and kill it because of the fact, but like you're spending 8-mana land a 5/5, and you're trying to tell me that you're going to be able to like make use of the Magecraft ability, because like you try and kill it, they return it to their hands. When they replay it, you counter it. Like it's just going to result in a nightmare of you spending a million mana trying to make this thing stick, and then not have it stay on the battlefield long enough to even make use of the Magecraft ability. So I do not love Jadzi. I wish there was more to Quandrix. So, and then last but not least, we've got Silverquill. What do you think of Silverquill?
And honestly, I'm not really sure what to think of them.
Well, I think Wizards played it really safe with Silverquill. Like going back to like they Silverquill really is the plus one counter deck of like the format or of this particular set, like, because they're the ones that have the overwhelming, you know, combination here, but there's nothing but playing with plus one counters, which is, I mean, it's interesting. It's safe, right? It's the safe way to play, and take it from there. So, but yeah, no, I think it's okay. I kind of, I am intrigued by what Blot Out the Sky is going to afford us as like a way to make a whole lot of two and flying creatures, because like the Inklings have flying, which is a big deal. Can you think of too many tokens that you can get en masse that have flying? Like, some things make bird tokens, but like usually you only get one, maybe two bird tokens. But like Blot Out, like, but like when black white, like when Silverquill makes tokens here, they're making tokens that fly. That's a big game. That's a big problem for people. Any thoughts?
I don't think. I was just gonna say is that like you have a certain card that can definitely go with that.
Me? What do I do? Well, I mean, like I'm Anointed Procession is like the obvious inclusion that goes with this.
But oh, don't like, forget Divine Visitation.
Oh well, Yar, yes. And the two of them together just make it go crazy pants. So, no, absolutely. Yeah. Blot, like, the Inklings are going to be interesting. They're going to be perfect for wearing counters and for wearing, like, carrying swords and stuff. Like, because they're all got evasion on them. Built-in evasion. Which is, could be more impactful than people think. And then, any discussion about this would be remiss if we didn't talk about the Mystical Archive cards. What are your thoughts? Mystical Archives.
And honestly, it seems like they're just like trying so hard to bring back like the masterpieces, but if I remember correctly, didn't they say that there's gonna be one in each pack?
Yes, I believe they did. Let me just like, oh, maybe not in each pack. In each set booster, there's a pretty sure they're in each set booster, not the regular draft booster.
Yeah, because like I was supposed to say is that like if they're wanting these to be the successor to masterpieces, then they should have them at least be as rare as the masterpieces were.
Well, okay, so I don't think these are quite masterpiece level in terms of like their rarity, nor are they masterpiece level in terms of their impact. Because if you think about it, the masterpieces were crazy powerful. Like so, I mean, some of these cards are obviously very good. So things like Mizzix's Mastery, Tainted Pact, who else? Natural Order. Like they're very powerful. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of them are not. Like a lot of them are like things like Negate or Adventurous Impulse or just Claim the Firstborn. Like they're cool cards, and I guess. Like they're nowhere near on the power level necessarily of a masterpiece sort of card, until you get them into into a foil version, which I think will be very challenging to get a hold of. But no, I mean I think these are interesting. I like them, but these are a lot of reprints. And I think overwhelmingly this is what people are excited for. Would you agree?
Yeah, like and I was gonna mention though is that thing. Let's just and they try to avoid talking about the certain incident that happened regarding these.
Oh yeah, we're not gonna talk about that. I mean,
yeah,
you're talking about where somebody like may have accidentally on purpose copied someone else's work.
Yeah, and they people listening to this cast and they, if you know, you know.
Yeah, no, we're not going to delve into that particularly. That's not a topic of we're going to dive into. However, the feel that I've been getting from people who are discussing it, and people who are excited. What people are most interested in is these Mystical Archive cards. The actual cards themselves from the set are fine, but they're not particularly exciting. But you can get some of these really cool cards that are in these new art styles, and the Japanese ones are beautiful, incidentally. But you can get the Swords to Plowshares, you can get a Lightning Bolt, you can get a Time Warp, you can get a Regrowth, you can get a Crossing Grip, which are all really beautifully done. I think people are going to be very excited to open these, and I'm no different. So, no, I think these are what people are most excited for, really. Like, the set itself feels kind of, for lack of a better word, feels kind of clunky, doesn't it, Lux? Like,
yeah.
Was this when people were excited about Strixhaven? Was this what you were imagining? Because it's not what I was imagining.
No, and honestly, I was expecting something a little bit more than what we got.
Yeah, me too. I was expecting more, and we didn't get it. So, but we did get these really cool Mystical Archives, and I think this is going to be enough to make this very popular and a big hit that people really enjoy. But it's not something that, you know, the set itself doesn't wow me in the way that some of the sets have in recent years. You know, I'm thinking back, you know, with even Zendikar Rising, there was some obvious, like, club you over the head good sort of cards.
And honestly, like, what I'm looking for is a set that wows me as much as Ikoria did.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, Ikoria, it was a darn good set. They did a really good job with Ikoria. They really sort of revolutionized the game with the companions and the ultimatums, and there's a lot of really potent cards that have come out of that that have, you know, really impacted a lot of different places. So, like, I don't know. We're going to see how this one plays out in the long run, but it feels initially like this is kind of, like, not at the same power level necessarily. Like, really? Would you agree?
Yeah.
So, anyway, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I mean, I'm not going to go crazy. I purchased my commander deck, so I will have a deck from this. We'll see how much of it I open, but in terms of packs, but I'll have my commander deck that I will have ready to play if I want to. But I don't know. So it's interesting. I think long and short of it, just a little bit underwhelmed with the whole set generally.
Yeah, but yeah, like, even though, yeah, and like, but of course, I was going to say, like, even if we can't do it in the store, like, me and some friends are going to get together and do a pre-release of our own.
Sounds good, man. I'm looking, like, I'm glad you can do that. I mean, out here, we're not able to do that. In fact, we'd be in direct contradiction of a number of public health regulations at that point if we got 8 of us together to play a bit of a pre-release. But let us know how it goes. I would love to hear how it goes, what's good, what's bad. Hopefully it's a lot of fun. It looks like a fun set, but I don't think it's quite on the power level of some of the other ones we've seen, you know, in the last, at least since we've started recording our podcast here.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. All right, so with that, so we're going to be moving on to segment 2, and we're bringing in our judge, Chris, to help us work through some of the cards. All right, folks, thanks very much, and on to segment 2.
Welcome back, everybody, and we're going to be joined with our judge, Judge Chris, who's here to go through our second segment tonight, which is talking all about some of the rules interactions from Strixhaven. So, Chris, how are you tonight? Are you doing okay?
I'm all right. I've been better. I recently got diagnosed with diabetes, so I'm trying to get that under control. Other than that, it could be worse. It could be worse.
Now, was it type 1 diabetes or type 2?
It's type 2, thankfully, so it's a lot more manageable than it could be.
Yeah, no, for sure. So it's not like your pancreas up and died. It's just that you just doesn't work like it should. Great. That's delightful. I'm sorry to hear that, my friend. I spent a number of summers working at a camp where all the campers were diabetic, so I have an appreciation for what you're now starting to experience and having to go through. Hopefully, it means that you're going to feel better because you know why your body might be all out of sync.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's definitely been a lot of things, the neuropathy and stuff like that, that kind of said it's like, something's wrong. I need to go to the doctor and get checked out.
Yeah, no, I get it. So, no. Well, anyway, that's unfortunate, my friend. But in the meantime, are you ready to talk a little Strixhaven?
Yeah, I am.
All right, let's get down. They've dumped us a whole pile of cards, a whole lot of things that are interesting to do. I thought we would start tonight with some of the actual mechanics that we've got here again. So, Some of them, I think, don't really apply to Commander. They're more interesting sort of side notes to make note of. So, like, the first one here is the learn mechanic that's tied to lessons. And I have an example here of, like, Professor of Symbology. We'll put these in the show notes so you guys can see them, too, our audience. So Professor of Symbology is 1 and a white for a 2/1 core cleric. It says, when Professor of Symbology enters the battlefield, learn. And it says in italics, you may learn a lesson, reveal a lesson card you have from you own from outside the game and put it into your hand, or discard a card to draw a card. All right, so that's the learn part, followed by the lesson. And the example I have here is environmental sciences, which is a 2-mana lesson that presumably you would go and find with your Professor of Symbology. It says, search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it in your hand, and shuffle, and you gain 2 life. So those are our examples there, Chris. Like, it seems pretty simple, right? Is there anything interesting as a judge that we should be aware of? Let's assume, like, we're not playing Commander. Let's assume we've gone to a pre-release or we're playing in paper, and someone plays one of these cards. Is there anything that players need to be aware of?
So as far as the lessons go, they are going to be a card that is in your sideboard. So for a pre-release experience where you're registering in a tournament and everything, you're building a 40-card minimum deck, you can play them in your deck, or you can play them as outside the game in your sideboard. In a pre-release environment, or any limited environment, your sideboard is considered to be any of the cards that are not currently in your deck between games. So you will be casting a learn card, a card that has learn, and you will find a lesson from that sideboard. And after the set goes legal and everything, and it goes on Arena as of sometime here in the next few days, after when this podcast release, if it's not already out, you will be fetching those lessons from your sideboard. And that's the main thing to know about. It's kind of like they've been doing this outside the game thing with companions in Ikoria last year, and now here a year later, now we have lessons. And that's pretty much what you need to know about where you're going to be finding that, where you're going to put them, that in the deck building process.
Yeah, and the thing is with Commander, without having a wish board available to us in most situations, like, there will be play groups that will allow you to have a wish board. And if your playgroup does let you have a wish board where you can now go and play, put these in your wish board and pull them out of your wish board, then great. I guess you can play the learn cards. But most places, like, you can't, right? Like, that's sort of not really a thing, correct?
Right. And the Rules Committee does not have any intention of adding sideboards to Commander. So because as far as in the format, you know, if you're playing just Magic on your kitchen table or whatever, so whatever cards you have, and you play a card that says go find something outside the game, then you just go find anything in your collection. There's not really any rules or anything. But with as unwieldy as Commander is, they have not allowed for cards that reference other cards outside the game. They did change that rule in Ikoria because of companions, that you can play cards like companions that reference themselves that exist outside the game, because the companion actually doesn't belong in any actual zone. It doesn't belong in the command zone in Commander. It's just outside the game. And there's no sideboard as a Commander. So they changed the rule so that self-referential cards that refer to themselves, you can play, which in this case, that only matters for companions. But it's going to continue just like with Wishes, with Karn the Great Creator and other cards of a similar nature. If a card refers to other cards from outside the game, they do not function in Commander.
Right, which is not surprising, and I'll be honest here, folks, if you really want to play the lesson cards, like, environmental sciences is like the one card that I sort of picked up on as being something that you might want to do, because now any color could have fixing. So if you're playing white red and you really need to have a piece of, like, fixing to go and, like, pull something up out of your deck so you have land, like, you could just run it in your deck. But, like, most of them are overpriced. They're not particularly good. I mean, even the mythic one, which is like Parade of Mascots or something, like, makes like a 1/1, a 2/2, and a 4/4. You're like, for 7 mana, you're like, I can do better So
yeah, like, I think that one, the environmental researches, there was like one other one that was like 3 or 4 mana that was actually a removal spell, which I thought was kind of good for mono white, even possibly mono black, because I think it removes a permanent, a non-land permanent. So
yeah,
it has a potential, but everything else is kind of it's limited fodder.
Yeah, pretty much. So the ability that seems to matter most is Magecraft. And so would you mind help us talk us through what Magecraft? I think it's pretty straightforward, but you know, as a judge, if you were to explain to somebody how Magecraft works, what would you do?
Well, right. So with Magecraft, you've seen this kind of text a lot before. It's very, very common on blue and red spells. Whenever you cast an instant sorcery spell, it doesn't matter what zone you cast it from. It just specifically says whenever you cast, you're going to get some kind of trigger from a permanent on the battlefield if it has Magecraft on it. It can be any kind of effect. It's on a number of different colored creatures and permanents. So it's on a Planeswalker with Professor Onyx in this set. And it's caused quite a few buyouts and other things because of how easy it is to abuse it. And the biggest thing and the reason those buyouts happen and the reason it's very, very abusable is because normally an effect that happens when you copy an instant sorcery, when you cast an instant sorcery spell, does not include when you copy it. Magecraft does. Magecraft's rule text specifically says that whenever you cast or copy an instant sorcery spell, you will get that Magecraft trigger. So that is the difference, the biggest difference to be aware of. There's a lot of confusion about things like the storm mechanic, for example, like where you cast a grape shot and you have a storm count of 10, you're not casting 9 more grape shots after that. You're putting copies of those on the stack. So those will not trigger things that happen when you cast a spell. In this case, Magecraft does take into account that you make copies of spells sometimes. So this will trigger off of that.
Right. In which it sort of gives me a very peculiar feeling that we might be in a situation where we're going to be like looking at some really broken stuff as a result of what this Magecraft ability could mean. I'm not so worried, Onyx is fine with, like, Chain of Smog, whatever. Okay, great. You did it. Good for you. But, like, we were talking about it with Kalamax, for instance. Like, Kalamax is going to get a whole lot of new goodies with Magecraft abilities, and this is going to get dumb, I think, like, personally.
It's going to be very interesting. I know there's at least one other creature that's a Golgari uncommon that has a kind of a life drain ability that drains the table. Yeah. And drains everyone. And
Zarina, I think her name is.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about it is that there are still a lot of legacy. I don't know if it's going to be legacy. I haven't played legacy in a long time, so I can't say for sure. But, you know, even in Commander, there are decks that use like Tendrils of Corruption, for example, as a game ender in the Storm deck. And with cards like Professor Onyx and this Golgari uncommon that drains people on copying spells, that makes it to where you kind of have a backup plan and you almost don't actually have to try as hard to keep storming up as high of a number as possible to finish a table off with Tendrils of Corruption, which Tendrils of Corruption is a storm spell. It says target player loses 2 life and you gain 2 life and they have storm. Right. So you'll have to do half the work to try and actually build up a Tendrils of Corruption because you have a spell on the table, a creature on the table with Magecraft that's going to do half the work for you.
Yeah. No. So it's a cool ability. I think it's one of the more powerful ones we've seen. I don't think it's hard to comprehend. And like now we're just looking out for things that are going to cut the copies really. And so.
Yeah. Copying instants and sorceries is one of the most powerful abilities in the game. So anything that empowers and encourages that is bound to cause an issue somewhere.
Yeah. No doubt there. And then the last sort of ability that we have here. We have two others. We have Ward, which is a evergreen mechanic that is a derivative and I figure is an ultimately fairer version of Hexproof. Would you agree there?
I would say that's a fair assessment. Yeah, that's definitely. People, Wizards have been trying to find some way to move away from Hexproof because it just does not cause fun gameplay and it causes non-interactive games. And especially because they keep putting on stuff like all the massively overpowered green creatures that they keep putting out because they can't seem to help themselves.
Well, I think the one that's actually more egregious is the Invisible Stalker. Like, I think Invisible Stalker was like just like was an egregious error because
yeah,
like it just ruined Limited. And as much as people might say, "Oh, Innistrad was so good," I'm like, it was until someone had a Stalker and put a dumb piece of equipment on it and just went to town. Yeah. And then that was a legit strategy. I'm gonna find a Stalker or a couple. I'm gonna slap some Butcher's Cleavers on them, and I'm just gonna I'm gonna run the table here, because it's not even cool, right? So Ward is now you have to pay a cost to try and target the creature or the spell, and if you don't pay the cost, then it is countered. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So very simply, it's a very simple mechanic to get. That's why it's going to be an evergreen one. You're not going to build a deck around it, but it's going to be just fine. And like there's already been templates of that, like Bone Crusher Giant, like kind of has Ward on it already. Like you have to pay a cost. If you don't, then although Bone Crusher doesn't give you a choice, but anyway. So yeah, it's already been floating around, folks. You just haven't been aware of it. Now it's been sort of like codified as being a thing. So there we go. And the last one is we have MDFCs that are back. So modal double phase cards are back. And this time I think they're interesting because now instead of being like we had in Zendikar where we had a spell on one side and a land on the other, or on Kaldheim it was a creature on one side and generally like an artifact or sometimes an enchantment on the other. Now we're getting things that are like two distinct like critters on either side of the card. Like the example I have pulled up here, so Shale, Dean of Radiance, and Ambrose, Dean of Shadow, which would be the Silver Quill Deans for the college. And like, is there anything people need to be aware of with these MDSCs? Are there anything that's inherently different than what we saw with Kaldheim, for instance?
So for the most part, for the MDFCs that have a permanent on both sides, like a creature, it's pretty much the same. You can, and it's mostly the same as well, because there are some that have instants and sorceries on the back now too.
True, true enough.
And that's kind of where I'm kind of skipping ahead to the next section, but kind of knocking people off one stone. But for the most part, it's the same in that you will be able to cast them from any zone that you are currently able to. So normally, without an additional effect or a permanent on the battlefield or something, you're only going to be able to cast these from your hand. You can cast either side from your hand as long as that you're able to and there's no effect stopping you from doing so. If you have an effect that would let you cast something from the top of your library, like Vizier of the Sand, Vizier of the Menagerie, that lets you cast creatures from the top of your library.
Right.
And there's Melek is a Paragon, which will let you cast instants and sorceries from the top of your library. So you can cast instants and sorceries for the most part in Strixhaven or on the backside, on the B side of these. But there are a few that are both instants and sorceries on the front side. But if you have an effect that would let you cast any instant or sorcery from your graveyard or from the top of your library, you would be able to cast those. The caveat is that with instants and sorceries in your graveyard is that you couldn't use something like Snapcaster Mage and target an MDFC in your graveyard that has a creature or a permanent on the front side. Because although you can cast it, if it's in your graveyard, because you would normally be able to cast it if you had an effect that gave you permission to cast all of your instants and sorceries in your graveyard in any other zone other than on the stack or in your hand, than on the stack, with whatever side you chose to cast when you cast it, the game rules only look at the front side of the card. So it would still be a creature and it wouldn't be a legal target for Snapcaster Mage. And lastly, the other big change with having instants and sorceries on the back side of an MDFC is if you have a creature on the battlefield that you play as a creature, but it has an instant or sorcery on the back side, if you would blink it, it's going to come back to the front. But, I just lost my train of thought. That's embarrassing.
Well, I think that's enough. Oh, no, I think it's fine. Like, I think we've got the idea of it. Like, you can blink it, you can bounce it, you can, like, and there are limitations in terms of what you can target with it. So, like, I think it's important that, for instance, like, when if you were to play a Sultai deck, and we'll look at the first card coming up here. We have Blex Vexing Beast, or Search for Blex, which is an MDFC. It's a creature on one side, a sorcery on the other. Snapcaster Mage couldn't go and snap back the Search for Blex. Is that correct? If it was in my graveyard?
Correct, because it's only looking at the face side of it, which is not in this inner sorcery, so it wouldn't be a legal target. What I was going to get at was that some of the spells in the deck that are dual face cards, like I was saying before, have instants and sorceries on both sides, on the front and the back side. If you were to manifest that instant or sorcery as a 2/2, and then you would say try to blink it, because there are a lot of decks that play manifest and commander will try to blink the manifest creatures to try and flip them up for a discount off their mana cost you pay otherwise. If for any reason a creature or a card or a permanent would enter the battlefield and it would try to enter and it's an instant or sorcery, it remains in exile instead.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Had not contemplated the manifest angle. Interesting. All right, so let's get into some of the cards. And so we've talked about Blex a little bit, and some of the effects of it, as we talked about. Would this be a card you're excited to play? Like, let's talk about, like, just quickly, as a judge, when you look at this card, you're like, how much of a problem does this card present for you as a judge? Is this something you'd be excited to play with? So on the front, you have Blex, 2 and a green for a 3/2 legendary creature pest. As other pests, bats, insects, snakes, and spiders you control get +1/+1. And then when Vexing Pest dies, you gain 4 life. Or on the back side, which I think is the more interesting card, 2 black for a sorcery called Search for Blex. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put any number of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You lose 3 life for each card you put in your hand this way. So
it's an interesting card. I don't see myself ever playing it. I like the front side that it gives all these different tribes. Like, they kind of give them a little bit of a lord effect. So they kind of, all those tribes, like bats and insects and snakes and spiders, kind of have a commander, so to speak. Like, they've tried, like, some with, like, spiders. Like, there's that one from
Ishkanah. Elder Moon or whatever. Ishkanah is the big one.
But, you know, these tribes generally don't have, like, any kind of tribal ward or anything. So that's kind of like a catch-all, and I kind of like that they did that. The backside of it, I am not sure about. It kind of reminds me, I used to run Promise of Power a lot in my commander decks back when I first started, and that was like 10 years ago now. And, you know, Promise of Power is a 5 mana. It gives you leaves you a pretty decent-sized body. You draw 5 cards. I think it was like you lose 5 life. So this kind of reminds me a little bit of that because you're looking at the top 5 cards of your library. But you have the potential to lose way more life from in the process of doing this. And the 4 mana slot in commander decks is really, really clogged up. It is extremely hard to try and narrow down the 4. The 3 and the 4 mana slot are where I struggle when I deck build the most. So I think as far as 4 mana goes, for what 4 mana like card draw spells that Black has, this is probably one of the better options out there. But whether I'm actually going to play or not, that's pretty up in the air, and I'm probably leaning towards no.
Yeah, like I liken this to like a single use a Sylvan Library effect in the back, which I thought was more interesting to me than the front. That's sort of where I took it. I mean, and I'm like, well, you know, like I could see myself building a deck where I'm exploiting this, particularly if I'm, you know, in my command zone where I have access to this, you know, very powerful draw spell, you know, multiple times in the game if I need it. Sure, like, yeah, it's expensive at 4 mana and then 6 and then 8, but if you needed to, because you're out of gas, like, you could do it and keep a grip, and like, it's hard on your life total, I agree, but you know, you're in a color that can at least gain it back, so you're not totally branched. But anyway, I think it's tough. Like, I think it's a tough spell, and I don't think it's going to be everybody's cup of tea for sure.
I think the most disappointing thing about this for me is that because it's a MDFC card and the front side's green, you can't play this in like a Rakdos deck or an or, you know, or another deck. It's just like there's so many good draw options in Golgari for black and green together. And
yeah,
I really want this for like an Orzhov deck or something like that. But then they kind of stuck Blex. They stuck Blex on the front of it, which is a very, very, very niche card just by itself. And then they put an actually okay, decent card on the back of it. But now you're trapped and have to play Golgari. And I did like your point about using it from the command zone. Like, if you would be playing this from the command zone for whatever reason, that is actually pretty neat to try and dig yourself out of a problem or a tough spot later on in the game.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, like, if this becomes the Spider Commander instead of Ishkanah, because, A, it's cheaper. Like, Ishkanah is expensive, if I remember right.
Yeah, and the Ishkanah is, like, five or six mana, possibly seven.
Yeah, so Ishkanah is five mana. And the activation is really really pricey to get Ishkanah, but I mean, it could be really good. But like, I don't know. Like, I feel like Blex might do that, you know, as the sort of a spider commander, and then you get access to this powerful draw spell in the back because you don't really want to play Blex for your commander until you've gone and spider spawning for about a million. Anyway, like, I feel like it's definitely a reach and it's definitely not top tier, but that's where I'm like the only way I'm conceptualizing this card being, you know, particularly interesting, because I think Blex is suitably restrictive, and if you're playing just like hardcore Golgari, like, you can do better, like, you really can. So anyway, that's my thought. That theory may pervade like many of my thoughts for this set. That's anyway, we'll come back to that thought in a second. All right, so up next we have Cody Vociferous Codex, which I think they're trying to be funny or something here, but anyway, so 3-mana legendary artifact creature construct is a 1/4. You can't cast permanent spells, and 4-tap add Wooburg, so white, blue, black, red, green. When you cast your next spell this turn, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile an instant or sorcery card with lesser mana value. Until end of turn, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Put each other card exiled this way on the bottom of your library in a random order. Okay. So my question is, I don't know if I want to play this card. I'm like, the jury is still out on that. Does this only go in a 5-color deck?
Unfortunately, yes, because mana abilities are part of the rules text, and the rules text is part of what you look at for color identity, so you couldn't put this in a monocolor deck or something. Even though they changed the rule to where, like, a mana rock or mana ability can produce any kind of mana that it would normally be able to produce. Like, for example, used to be they had a rule to where a Felwar Stone, which taps for any mana that a land your opponent controls can produce, could only produce a colorless mana. They changed that a long time ago. It's been a long time ago now.
I remember that change got made, and everyone was like, oh my goodness. I'm like, come on, guys. It's not that big a deal. But anyway, yes.
But,
okay.
But otherwise, yeah. So you still wouldn't be able to use it in anything other than a 5-color deck.
So this sounds like Golos for spells. Am I, like, sort of?
Yeah. With more restrictions.
Yeah. Like, I'm interested in, like, the spend 4, get 5, cast a thing. That, to me, is interesting. But the fact that I can't cast permanents is a bit of an issue. Just slightly. So, I don't know. I'm not in love with it. Oh, so here's a question. So, in a deck where I'm, like, playing Essica, and I'm playing Essica for the disgusting enchantment on the back. Where is Essica? Can you find me Essica? So Essica, I want to be Essica. At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal cards at the top of your library until you reveal a creature or planeswalker card. Put that card on the battlefield. So Prismatic Bridge would allow, I could play Prismatic Bridge as my commander, play Cody, activate the Prismatic Bridge to play permanence, and then use Cody to cast instances of sorceries. Correct?
Let's see here. Does the backside of Seeker say, being your upkeep, well, so you reveal a creature, planeswalker, put that card onto it. Okay, yes. So the Prismatic Bridge would work because you're not casting it, you're just putting it directly onto the battlefield.
Right. Okay, so that's interesting. I don't think it's good. It's interesting. Anyway, let's leave it at that. Like, I don't know why I would want to do this.
I'm looking forward to seeing what janky stuff people come up with that they do with it, but I won't be playing it myself.
Yeah, I'm going to let someone braver than me figure out how to use this card. I'm going to, like, I will just probably keep clear until it wrecks me. Then I'm like, oh, okay, you're smarter than me. I'm okay with that. That's where I'm at, Chris. All right. Up next, we have Crackle with Power. And this one really got my attention because I think this card is kind of nutty putty. So, Crackle with Power. XXX red, red. Triple X. It still makes me laugh. Sorry. Sorcery. Crackle with Power deals 5x X damage to each of up to X targets. So here's the only question I had. Like, I think the rest of it is pretty much straightforward. It's the, well, for instance, I use the example of X equals 10, where I'm now, but I only have 8 legal targets on the battlefield. Will this spell fizzle, or is it just going to do as much as it can until it can't target no more?
The key word here in the text is it says up to. So that means that you don't have to select up to the total number of targets that you're able to. So you can choose up to 8 different targets as opposed to, you know, having 10.
Okay, so this ultimately makes this card way better. Like, it's yes. Still, like, it's still an issue because it's a gigantic pile of mana. But I don't think X needs to be 10 for this to be good. I think, correct. Like, I think X at 5 would be Looney Tunes.
Thankfully, they've gone past the old days of Decimate where you had to have 4 different permanent types on the battlefield to even be able to cast the thing.
Well, you see, that was in the back of my brain when I thought that, I'm like, does this? And you're right, the up to, I should have clued in on the up to part, but, like, yeah, Decimate is a card where got used to get a lot of play and that used to produce a lot of feel bads because they would, somebody would bounce the artifact or something, and then the spell would just fizzle because there's not a legal target for it, right?
A lot of my situation with Decimate was always like, you know, I really got to get rid of this, you know, the Sunbird's Invocation, and you have the only artifact on the battlefield, and it's your 1 mana rock. I'm sorry, friend, but that's got to go.
Yeah. It's like, take one for the team here. So, like, Crackle with Power is interesting. Now that I very clearly, it will continue to, it will just burninate the table. Like, I'm pretty okay with this. Like, but I had that lingering doubt in the back of my brain. I'm like, is this going to fizzle if I don't have enough targets? Because that would suck. If you invest 32 mana in this, I don't even know how you're making 32 mana, but, like, you make 32 mana and you're going to go try and burninate the table and then it fizzles because you can't do it. Like, that would be awful. But as it stands,
make 32 mana.
Well, you know, it's not that hard.
One of my favorite cards. It's one of my favorite cards, Mana Geyser.
Mana Geyser would do it. I'm thinking Growing Rites of Itlamok could do it, or Storm the Vaults could do it, maybe, if you're playing a heavy artifact deck. Like, you can do it, and you can if you untap your land a couple of times, like, there are ways to produce that much mana. It's not that difficult to conceptualize. It's just, you know, how frequently are you going to get all the... It's a little silly, and, like, if you're making 32 mana, you're going to win the game anyway. Like, come on.
How long is it going to sit in your hand until you get to that point? That's kind of a consideration as well.
But I see, like, I don't even think X needs to be that big. Like, how many times have people, like, oh, I'm at 25, oh, I'm at 29, and, like, you blow up 2 people on the table out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, sorry, guys. Like, I think that's going to be the most common case where, like you're in a position, like, you're pretty well stabilized, and you're like, I need a way to knock out 2 people right now, so it's just me heads up with somebody, and just going to do it, and you're just going to get them out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, well, my game is over now. So, you know, like, to that end, it kind of feels like Torment of Hellfire, which kind of makes me kind of angry because I don't like the way that Torment of Hellfire works, because all it is just feels like it's a big, like, all the only thing, in order for Torment of Hellfire to be good, you just have to have a lot of mana. Same thing with Crackle of Power. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who die to it just by virtue of having somebody with a big pile of mana in front of them. So, don't love it, but anyway.
It reminds me, I mentioned the Mana Geyser, this is totally off topic. It reminded me of the one time I played it. I love group hug play. I have a love-hate relationship with group hug players. because they just kind of turned the game on its side, that we had a five-player pod and someone played Collective Voyage, and literally everyone paid into Collective Voyage to go get, like, 11 lands out of it. And I was the next and they all come into play tapped, and I was the next person up in line, and I had a mana geyser sitting in my hand, and I pumped all that mana into a Torment of Hellfire. So that's how you use this kind of card.
Oh, my God. You take advantage of the group of player. Yeah, no. So in my play group with Collective Voyage, we all had a mutual agreement that if you see it, you counter it. Because what it does is it creates a situation where everybody's casting all the haymakers in their hand. And it stops being about my strategy versus your strategy. It's just like who can draw bigger haymakers and cast them. That's really all it comes down to. So
it really doesn't become an arm race.
Yeah, and so we're like, yeah, we need to not let this card resolve, and we also need to not all pay into it. But anyway, but that's, you know, another effect for another day. All right, up next we have Elite Spellbinder, which is, I believe, is the card, like the Paulo Vito Damo de Rosa card, with his likeness on the card, which is an interesting effect. So, two and a white with a human cleric of flying. When the Elite Spellbinder enters the battlefield, look at target opponent's hand. You may exile a non-land card from it. Or as long as that card remains exiled, its owner may play it. A spell cast this way costs two more to cast. So I think my question comes down to this. So if I play this card, look at my opponent's hand, remove a thing, and it's now exiled. But they can still cast it if they're prepared to pay the tax. Is that correct?
Correct. They are definitely, they will definitely play it. This is definitely more of a 60 card, like modern card. I don't look forward to playing against this in modern eventually when I go back to playing in stores, but in Commander, it's definitely not as good because two mana is not much to ask for.
No, I was going to say, like, this is not really, I mean, but I wasn't sure because usually when this gets templated, you get the ability where they can't cast it and maybe you could. Or at the very least, they get denied it, like Brain Maggot style, where they it gets denied from them, and then they can only get it back once the Brain Maggot has been removed. But in this case, you could even have the Elite Spellbinder on the table, and they could still cast the spell out from underneath it, correct?
Yes. And this is really interesting because I'm looking forward to seeing how this is going to get played and how this is going to impact what the formats is going to be played in. Because, like in bringing back up Modern again, Spell Queller is a thing, and it's a three mana that does a similar effect. Oblivion Rings, a spell that's on the stack, basically exiles a spell, and then when the Spell Queller leaves the battlefield, its owner may cast that spell at that time. Yeah. So this, in this case, they don't get to just immediately cast a spell for free, but or it doesn't go back onto the stack, but they actually have to pay two more for it, but it still kind of removes it temporarily. So it's going to be interesting to see if this kind of unseats Spell Queller in the three mana slot in a lot of decks. But as far as like Commander goes, which is the main thing we talk about, then I doubt it's going to see much play.
Yeah, no, I was kind of, this is more of an interest question here, more so than I'm actually worried about how it's, I'd be surprised if I see this card get played against me at any point in the next six months to a year, because I just don't think it's really that impactful to us. And yeah, just don't think. And like, because you're going into a single target's hand, like, and the other two players are unaffected by it, like, this is just not the sort of effect that you'd be really looking for in Commander, unless, of course, you have a really heavy, like, taxation style deck. And even then, I can't even imagine why you'd spend the card slot on this.
I think the one deck I have that I play in is possibly, I have, instead of building Braggo Blink, because Braggo tends to be really oppressive, I built Yorion.
Oh, yeah.
And I could actually see myself putting this in Yorion as a more fair hand control. It doesn't cost so much in the way of, like, feel bads. But
right.
I don't even play Oblivion Ring effects in Commander anymore, because every time I Oblivion Ring something, it tends to come back to haunt me like a few turns later. So I'm still pretty nervous about playing it, at least.
Yes. So I was playing a game and thought I was super clever, because there was an effect on the battlefield that, like, sort of like Hushwing Griff, that sort of stifled the ETB trigger. So I jammed the inverter of truth I had in my hand on the battlefield so I could get a 6-6 flyer. Well, I'll be darned if somebody doesn't O-ring it off the table. Great. And then someone killed the Hushring Griff and then promptly destroyed the enchantments. And so I got the inverter truth back, including the ETB. And I'm like, oh no. Oh no. Like, oh, there it goes. And I'm like, yeah, I had like 18 cards or something in my whole library left. And I was like, well, that's just worked out great. Like, oh boy.
I think my favorite story isn't even Commander. It's back in Scars of Mirrodin and Innistrad Standard. We had FNM. I think we had a game. I have a picture of it that has 8 Oblivion Rings on the table, and they're all targeting each other. So when that was a nightmare to keep track of, and I feel terribly bad for the judge that had to come and watch that match to make sure that the Oblivion Ring trigger is resolved correctly.
Oh my gosh! Like that's like LSV breaking MTGO with Oblivion Ring. Like, oh no, oh god. Anyway, Elise Spellbinder is an interesting card. I don't think we'll see it much, but it was good to talk about it. Up next, we have Jadzi, Oracle of Arcavios. And on the back, we have Journey to the Oracle. Let's read Jadzi, which is the front of the card. So Jadzi is a 6 blue-blue, so that's 8 mana, folks, for a 5-5. Discard a card. Oh, sorry, legendary creature, human wizard. Wizard may matter, but anyway, we'll see. Return Jadzi, Oracle, or Arcavios to its owner hand by discarding a card. So if it's going to die, you can throw something out and return it to your hand. Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a non-land card, you may cast it by paying 1 rather than paying its mana cost. If it's a land card, put it onto the battlefield. Then we have Journey to the Oracle. For 2 green-green, you have sorcery. You can put any number of land cards from your hand onto the battlefield. Then, if you control 8 or more lands, you may discard a card. If you do, return Journey to the Oracle into its owner's hand. Okay, my question here is not the rules understanding. It's that perhaps you as a judge may have an appreciation of, like, why would I play this card? Because soapbox here. I'm going to stand on it for a second. So the back of this card is bad. It's actively bad. And I don't think we want to play this. Like, just do not. Like, it's at 4 mana. This is not Explosive Vegetation. This is not Splendid Reclamation. I can't think of a situation where I'm going to have a pile of land in my hand where I'm going to need to get rid of it that I can't already get rid of them through better means, is really my problem with Journey to the Oracle. So I don't think anybody's going to cast the backside of this card, like, ever. So the question becomes, is Jadzi, like, what's the story with Jadzi here, and is it any darn good? So, Chris, like, please tell me, is Journey to the Oracle any darn good?
Journey to the Oracle, I do not see myself, I just can't see myself playing it, because having that, the point in the game where in a deck, okay, you know, so obviously this is Simic. Simic's really good at drawing cards, but at any point in the game where I have enough lands in my hand that I want to pay 4 mana to dump it, well, number one, if it's early on in the game and that's most of my hand, then I'm in trouble because I don't have anything to do with all those lands and all that mana that I just put onto the battlefield. In the late game, you generally have enough lands, enough mana rocks that if you're drawing enough lands to where you want to use this for something, you're probably already winning anyway. So I just can't see myself wanting to cast this most of the time. I just see it sitting in my hands.
Like, I could conceive of a situation where, like, you're playing a heavy landfall deck and you want it, but I'm like, really? Like, is this what we're doing? Because, like, I'm thinking, like, I want Burgeoning long before I want this card. Right? Like, that's what I want. If I want lots of extra land triggers, I can just play Burgeoning.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. We've established we don't really dig the back. Fair enough. So let's talk about Jadzi. So, 6 blue-blue for a 5-5. And, okay. I like the fact that it can protect itself. So, returning it to my hand so it doesn't die is good. Because if this was my card at 8 mana, I don't really want it to get destroyed the moment it lands on the battlefield, correct?
Right.
However, let's ask yourselves objectively, folks out there listening, this ability with the Magecraft, if you play Jadzy, is anybody on the board going to let you have an opportunity to untap with that thing? Chris, would you let me if we were playing a game, and we've played it a few times, would you let me stick a Jadzy and have the have the whole turn table go around and let me keep it?
Nope.
No, you're not. So nope. Somebody's trying to kill this, folks. This has got a lightning rod for a removal spell. All right. Maybe it's a board wipe. Maybe it's a bounce spell. Maybe it's just straight up source of plowshare. And you could think, oh, I'm so clever. I'm going to discard this card and bring Jadzy back to my hand so it doesn't die. But the problem there, folks, is you still have to pay 8 mana the next turn if you want to resolve Jadzy. So now you've invested like 16 mana. How many times could you do that before, A, you run out of cards in your hand, and now you've invested a lot of mana to do not very much to try and keep your 5/5 on the battlefield? So you're going to have a lot of mana tied up in this card, just trying to make it go off. And then if you do, so ideally you stick it and you can use it that turn. But what sort of instances and sorceries are you casting that cost so little, or you're still going to have an extra 1 mana available for you to play this card, like play whatever comes off the top? I'm like, I can't, like, you're going to need like 15 mana. Like, let's think about this. You have 8 mana, and you play, like, divination. Like, let's just do something simple as divination. Now you're at 11. You need one more to even get whatever off the top is, and that's 12. You have 12 mana, untapped mana, just to do this. What Christmas land is this?
The only defensible thing about this card is that Simic is probably the cards that are best at protecting creatures. And it is probably the best cards at ramping out. So getting up to 8 mana isn't so bad, but the amount of ramp that you would be needing to play to try and get this out on any meaningful timetable means that when you're trying to cast instants and sorceries, you're going to be hitting like Kodama's Reaches you don't need later in the game for more lands and things on the order of that. So it's just like, I don't see it. I'm not sure where they were going with this, because eight mana, I'm not playing it in limited.
No. Just like, you'll be dead. You'll be dead before you resolve this.
Yeah. So I don't know where this was good. Where they were going with this. It's like a lot of cards in this set, and that it says so much, but it doesn't really do anything.
Agreed. It's 8 mana to do. It's like a black hole for your mana. Like, I want to spend a lot of mana to do not very much, and this is how you do it, folks. I'm going to be interested to see, because I was listening to the Command Zone, and apparently one of the guys there played Jadzy at the next game nights that is coming up shortly. So maybe we get to see Jadzy go off and it look cool, and maybe the card will be crazy good. But I have my suspicions. I have my suspicion that this is going to be, in most cases, a warm pile of garbage. That's my thought.
I'm sure it's going to be one of those situations where you have someone like Cassius Marsh or Gray come on to the command, their usuals in the game nights, and they're going to come on like with their Mana Crypts and Grim Monoliths and all that, and they're going to like ramp Jadzy out in like turn 4 or something. To make it look like it's good outside of like, those
Play my Mana Crypt. Put my Mana Crypt into my Sol Ring, into my Signet here, and I'll have Jadzy online in turn 3. What? Okay. The rest of us in Christmas Land don't do that. But anyway, because I'm pretty sure 1 Mana Crypt blows my budget for almost any deck I own. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. So all right, moving on. We've got Mavinda, Student's Advocate. Oh my goodness! Don't get me started with this card. Okay, Mavinda says, 2 and a white for a legendary creature, Bird Advisor. It's a 2/3 with flying. 0. You may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard this turn. If that spell doesn't target a creature you control, it costs 8 generic mana more to cast this way. If that spell will be put into a graveyard exile instead, activate only once each turn. Okay. Chris? Yes. Why is this a mythic?
Because it's probably the same reason that a lot of cards are mythic, limited.
Oh my god.
The same reason Masters 25 had you open up a 25-cent channel in your mythic slot, because casting channel Fireball Unlimited might have been cute.
Okay, so I'm going to be on. Like, so, folks, okay, let's talk this through just quickly with Chris. Make sure I understand how this properly works. So, I get to spend zero mana to cast an instant or sorcery card from my whatever. Do I have to pay the mana? Do I have to pay the mana cost of the spell for my graveyard?
Yes, you do.
So let's imagine I have something like Swords to Plowshares. I have a Swords to Plowshares in my graveyard. I really want to cast it because there's a terrifying thing on the fourth side of the table, and I want to get rid of it. So I can use Mavinda to target that Swords to Plowshares to target my opponent's spell or my opponent's creature. But because the Swords to Plowshares doesn't target my thing, I have to spend 8 mana more. So now my Swords to Plowshares costs me 9 mana. Am I correct in how I understood how this card works?
You're correct.
Okay. So what Mavinda wants me to do is to target combat tricks to use that target my stuff. Right. So... okay, so this might be interesting in a heroic deck. It could be. Like, if you play this with heroic creatures, this could be fun. You get to go and maybe it's fun in Feather. Like, it's as a redundant effect with Feather. But was there any other possible explanation for why I'd want to play this card? I can't conceive of one. But maybe you, as a judge who are more learned than I am in these ways, might decide to tell me that Mavinda could actually be good.
It's definitely something for spell-based Voltron decks. I could see it in, like, Feather's definitely the main one. I could see it in, like, Shuyan. Possibly, I don't know.
Yeah, like, I don't, like, what
some
other...
some other deck with, like, blue and red in it. This, like, Jeskai or Azorius.
Yeah, like, I just feel like this feels so bad. Could you imagine opening this up as your mythic, and you're like, dude, I opened Mavinda, I want to build a deck, and then you just discover it's just a heaping garbage fire? Like, come on, like, I'm... No, so... I know this is not an opinions show tonight. It's supposed to be rules, but I'm out on Mavinda. I don't really talk about it anymore. What is this? Like, this is not a card I want to play. It's cute. The fun little owl talking to the student there is lovely. So anyway, but yeah, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm done. Anything else, Chris, on it, or are we moving on?
I think the only thing I could see this with is if there was, like, a trigger of some permanent somewhere that, like, when you activate an ability, like, it triggers an effect or something.
Maybe.
I think the only thing, because there's nothing in the rules text that would target you from, that would stop you from targeting the same thing over and over again for zero mana.
Except for the fact the spell gets exiled.
Well, you can, so the rule text says that you can cast target spell from your graveyard. I think it says this turn.
Yes.
So, so in that case, you're not actually casting the spell with the ability. You're just granting the ability to cast that spell this turn.
I guess, yeah.
So, like, I did a quick search on Scryfall here, and looking for effects, say, whenever you activate the ability of an artifact or creature or whatever, and some kind of triggered ability to go with it. And the only thing that really came up was, like, there's an uncommon from Morrowind called Ceaseless Seer Blades. It says whenever you play an activated ability, whenever you activate an activated ability of... Oh, wait, that's just elemental, so that doesn't even count. Yeah, I'm having a hard time
now. Ability
of a Sarcom Plains. Nope, that doesn't work.
Oh, there's a Crackdown Construct. Whenever you activate an ability of an artifact or creature that isn't a mana ability, Crackdown. Would this be a mana ability?
No, this wouldn't be. This would not be a mana ability.
So, because that one went in was an infinite combo to make Crackdown Construct arbitrarily large with Wandering Fumarole. Could you do similarly here with Mavinda?
I believe you should be able to, because even though you'd be targeting the same spell, there's nothing in the rules text that stops you from being able to do that. It would just be redundant.
Right. Okay. So I could make an arbitrarily large Crackdown Construct. It plays kind of nice with Monetary Mentor, which is kind of a thing. You kind of get some heroic stuff if you want to like Voltron up your Battlewise Hoplite or your favorite Hoplite or Wingsteed Rider or whatever. But I guess if that's what you want to do, I don't feel like this is I'm reaching here, right? I'm really reaching here. I don't love it. I'm sorry, folks. Like I'm trying. I can't do it. And then the fact that my silly Swords of Plowshare is now going to cost me 9 mana makes me so angry. I'm sorry. So irrationally angry. Anyway. All right. So moving on to Plarg, Dean of Chaos, and Augusta, Dean of Order. So Plarg I've got, because I'm pretty sure I used Plarg in a deck already that I brewed up on Moxfield. And I kind of like Plarg because it feels like you can use Plarg as a way to generate extra card advantage when, like, you run out of cards in red and white Now you can go and spit stuff onto the battlefield and keep the value train going. But the card here that interests me is Augusta, Dean of Order, and it's this tap untap shenanigans down here. So whenever you attack, untap each creature you control, then tap any number of creatures you control. And so this feels like things that are really good with creatures that have been like convoked or inspired. Are there other things that come to mind as being really powerful abilities that can be used with tapping and untapping stuff?
It's not something that comes up often.
Well, like I feel like it does, but not in red and white, right? So like for instance, like if you can get a card like Drownu is very powerful. You can get it to untap and untap, or you get that sort of quasi snapcaster effect. But Drownu's playing Dimir, not playing Vorhold. So like I feel like you're better off like with the convoke angle. Like, you use a creature to convoke, and you can untap it, and then you can then, like, make use of this other ability here, like, or the inspired mechanic, which I don't know if there's any really good any good triggers that you can get. Like, you can make a bird, I think, with a god-favored general, and then there's, like, the red one is, like, makes, like, a... It's like a 3-1 elemental. Like, I don't feel like these are good payoffs for tapping and untapping in white. Yeah. Is there other ones? Like, what about, would Stoneforge Mystic be any good?
It would let you fetch up two different, like, in an equipment deck, it would let you try and fetch up two different equipment with Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah, so, like, that might be, like, where you go. Like, you're, like, again, but unfortunately, that goes back to the same old, like, red-white equipment deck that you're going to go find. But, like, if you had activated abilities like that, you could then use, like, Augusta's ability to, you know, to diddle around and get stuff up. Like, it's interesting, right? Like, it's an interesting ability. Mm-hmm. And I actually like it being different than just the straight-up dedicated, like, combat-related stuff that we usually see with red and white. I'm trying to be careful here, not just attribute it to Boros. Like red and white usually though has a very aggressive bent, and so now like Augusta has this other ancillary aim here with untap stuff, which could be fun, could be cool.
I mean, really, I like it. Actually, I really like the front side because in red and in red white both, one of the biggest problems is unless you happen to have a Boros charm in your hand, but board wipes. And a lot of your most important cards in Boros and white tend to be a few mana or less. That's not sense to be where your mana curve tops out at a lot of the time. So
yes,
that's really cool. And I just noticed, but Augusta is actually kind of a take on Sword of the Parun, which has the exact stag text, but instead of an activated ability, it lets you tap and untap the equipped creature. It just gives it, lets you once, when you attack per turn, to just untap or mass untap or untap some creature.
Yeah, I actually like this one. This one is interesting. Some of the other Deans I don't like, but this one is interesting. I like Plarg. I like Augusta. They're both interesting. And I don't feel like some of the other Deans, I feel like they're within intention with each other. Where like we'll get to the blue-green one here. And where they feel like you actually want to have both of them on the battlefield at the same time, and you can't because of just the nature of Commander. But this one feels like they do different things. So, you know, anyway, I really do find this one really quite interesting, and it's a very different sort of feel than sort of what I've been attributed to, pardon me, to red and white generally in the past. So I like this one. I think it's really interesting. And that sort of untap ability with Augusta intrigued me. I think I've parsed out how I feel about the Plarg's ability. And I know somebody said, well, Bruce, you're spending 5 mana to get a 3 mana thing. And I'm like, you're right. I am. I'm okay with it. Because if you're red and white, you just need to keep putting things on the battlefield. And, you know, Plarg is going to at least let you do that. So. All right. Moving on. We have Adrix and Nev twin casters. These are from the Commander product. I think this is the face card for the Quandrix deck. So, 2 blue green for a legendary creature Merfolk Wizard with Ward 2. If one or more tokens would be created under your control, twice that many of those tokens are created instead. So that's. Is that Parallel Lives on legs now?
Yeah, it is. I mean, my question is, could we just have a Parallel Lives reprint? It's $30 now. I think it's actually up to $40 almost US.
Yeah, it's like $40. It's steep. No, it's rough. Parallel Lives.
That's 50.
That's like $50. Like, I'm glad I bought one. I bought one like for $25 like a number of years ago for a deck, and I'm glad I did, because good gracious. That's steep. Anointed Procession is also like $40 and climbing. Like, it's rough out there. If you're looking to build do tokens, like we could have done with a legendary enchantment that you could play as a commander that does this instead of derpy tutus. But anyway, no, like I don't mind this. Like, it's fine. It's going to be powerful. It's going to go and make fractals a thing. But I feel like that's what this wants to do. It's like it's all about the fractals, or it's all about the Nadir Kraken tentacle tokens or Chasm Skulker tokens or whatever. But like, you okay if that's what you want to do? Like, I guess.
it's Simic doing Simic things.
You see, I don't associate this making tokens a Simic ability. I took putting +1/+1 counters on stuff as the Simic ability. This is different. This is a very green tokeny feel, but you're getting blue and green tokens, which, like, you're getting elves, you're getting squid, you're getting fractals. That's sort of the three most dominant like tribes that make tokens in this particular color combination. And I'm not sure I'm like elves doesn't really want to be blue and green, right? Like, you're not playing this as a you're not generally making merfolk tokens. Although maybe you could. This turns into a merfolk deck.
You could.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You hear the disdain in my voice. I want more from my. I guess we've been spoiled with like having so many lunatic like blue and green cards printed in the last sort of 2 years that we're all like. Stuck with Stockholm syndrome. We're like, but you're not Uro. You're not Uro. Like, so I don't know. So anyway, all right. Moving on. Guardian Archon. What does Guardian Archon say? So 4 white, the Archon 5/5 flying. As Guardian Archon enters the battlefield, secretly choose an opponent. Reveal the player you chose, you and target opponent, you and target permanent you control, each gain protection from the chosen player until end of turn. Activate only once. So my question is really, what would you recommend as a judge players do to take note of who they've selected with this sort of effect? What is the best way that you can do that so it's fair and equitable without, you know, essentially tipping your hand to your opponents until you want to?
Yeah, definitely. The easiest way is definitely to just pick, take, if you're playing cards like this, and there's a few cards like this in white, to just get some a sticky pad or a small notepad and pen and paper and just write their name down, sit it face down under the card even.
Right.
Track where it's at and just do it that way. Like, pen and paper is the surefire way to do it. Everyone's going to see if you try, you know, do anything cheaty, which you're playing Commander, so if you're trying to cheat in Commander, then...
You're a scumbag.
I'm going to hold comments on that.
You're a scumbag.
you need some winning in other areas of your life if you're cheating Commander.
Yeah.
But the best way to be clear and to make sure that everyone knows that that's there, and that's, it's just the most solid way to go about it.
Okay, so my next question is this. What does it mean for me to get protection? I'm not sure I'm familiar with me getting protection from an opponent. Like, I've seen right. that text. Mm-hmm. I've seen that text you put on, like, True Name Nemesis.
True Name Nemesis, yeah.
But what does it mean for, like, me to get it as a person instead of having my creature who can now attack me with impunity? What does it mean for me as a person to get protection from them? Like, do I not take damage from their creatures?
It's very similar to as if a creature had protection from something. If a creature had protection from whatever it might be, you couldn't target it, you couldn't enchant it, the enchantment would fall off. You would not, that creature wouldn't take combat damage. So in this case, you would take combat damage. You could still be hit by anything that could target you, you could not be hit by it. Of course, you could still be hit by anything that is a global spell.
Right.
Or that not global spell. That's actually real sex, so I shouldn't use say that. But an effect that affects the whole table and not, it doesn't target you, you can still hit by that. But anything that targets, you would not be able to be hit targeted with. Or, and you could not take damage. The player actually couldn't even attack you because you have protection from protection from the creatures as well. Since
right.
they control the creatures.
Right. Okay. And so, like, okay, so curses could fall off me, for instance. If my opponent put curses on me that I don't want anymore, give myself protection, those curses fall off me, and they just disappear.
Exactly.
Huh. That's got some applicability. I this card is interesting. I haven't seen that text too frequently that gives us protection from stuff. And protection is a rather difficult concept to try and explain to somebody. Like, it seems simple, but it is not, is it?
It is online, and it's one of the reasons they don't use it that much anymore, because it's a very complex, it's kind of along the same lines as regenerate and things like that. They're very old abilities from early in the game that they just don't use that much anymore. Regenerate, which they phased out completely along with landwalk, but it's kind of one of the last remaining things from that kind of overly complex rules text that's still around that pops up every now and then.
Right, and here they put it on a card that I imagine is going to see, like, it's in a pre-con, so it's going to get played. Like, oh no, can you imagine someone trying to figure this out at home? And, like, by themselves, they don't have a judge handy. Good grief. Oh, anyway. Okay, we're moving on. We're going to go to Keon Dean. I think her name is Keon. Keen, I don't know, Keon, I think is how I'm going to pronounce it here, folks. And if I'm wrong, I'm pretty okay with it. Keon Dina Substance for two and a green, legendary creature, elf, druid, 2/2. So tap, exile the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it in your hand. Otherwise, put a study counter on it. 4 and a green, create a 0/0 green and blue fractal creature token. Put up a simple counter on it for each different mana value along among non-land cards you own in exile with study counters on them. That's a word of text. And that's just the front side, because the back says, Imbraham, Dean of Theory, 2BBB, 3/3, legendary creature, bird wizard with flying, X blue blue tap. Exile the top X cards of your library and put a study counter on each of them. Then you may put a card you own in exile with a study counter on it into your hand. Holy is a lot of words. Okay. Where do you want to start with this card there, Chris?
Let's start with the front. Let's start with Kian.
Okay, let's start with Kian. So to where I tap it and I put a study counter on something. If I get a land, great. If I don't, I'm going to then put a study counter on my thing. And then for green, I'm making a creature. That's a fractal token that might be some number of things. Whether, I imagine in most cases you exile. Let's say you exile. You can exile four cards over a number of turns with Kian. How many different mana values are you expecting to find?
That's a really, really difficult question, because in a blue-green deck, in a Simic deck, Simic curves and Commander are kind of all over the place. It kind of really depends on the deck. This deck, you have a 4-mana Commander on one side and a 3-mana Commander on the other. It doesn't want you to use 5-mana for something. So I would imagine you would be keeping your curve pretty low in this deck. To be able to afford a lot of mana into the activated ability that's cost 4 and a green. So I would think that you probably wouldn't be seeing any fractals that are bigger than like a 3/3 or 4/4 most of the time. Lands do count as being zero mana cost. So as soon as you hit a land, if you could, it would count towards it. But Kiana just puts the land into your hand so that you don't get a free shot off of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, particularly if you're just using, I imagine the temptation is going to be 3-mana play Kian or whatever her name is. And how many times are you going to have to activate this to put a study counter on it before she dies? Probably once, maybe. Maybe it's the sort of commander where your opponents just don't care and then you get to keep it. And
yeah. For me, I think I would let her sit on the board probably for a while personally, just because the more cards they're exiling, there is not very much stuff that interacts with the exile zone. So you're not gonna be getting the vast majority of those cards back. And 5-mana to make a 3/3 or a 4/4, probably at the largest most of the time, is not a great rate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. So yeah, like, and then so you're spending 5-mana and you're making a hill giant at best, sort of idea. Like, I don't know. It feels like you're going to get some combination of either a grizzly bear or a hill giant.
Yeah, that feels like probably the best, what you're going to be looking for most of the time.
And I mean, I know they come in with +1/+1 counters on them, which has applicability. You can do goofy things with the counters, move them around, do fun stuff like that, but I'm not sure. I just don't think that's particularly good. So Imbraham is a little more interesting. So X blue blue and tap. You exile the top cards. So you can put a whole bunch of cards into exile with study counters on them. And then you can go and put one of them into your hand. So you have like some sort of card selection here to go put one of them back into your hand. So that's the only.
He's more interesting for sure.
He's more interesting. There's no doubt than Kian. I think Kian is. So, I think the correct order to play these is you don't actually play Kian on 3. You play Imbraham at some later stage of the game, where you can then activate this ability and exile, 4, 5, 6 cards. And then put one back in your hand. So like maybe you have 4 different converted mana costs so that when you then play Kian, you could then activate it for fractals. I don't know. Like, I feel like, although I did hear somebody. Oh, go ahead.
I think Imbraham is just fairly interesting by himself. Like, I don't know that I would actually even want to play Keon or Keanu. Just because, so you pay X into blue, two blue, and tap him, and you exile the top six cards. The next time you tap him, though, you can just choose to pay zero index. So for two blue and tap, you get to put any of those cards you exile with him the first time, or from then on out, into your hand.
True
enough. So for two mana, getting a pretty decent, I would hope, large selection is okay. But my main thing with these, and this is the Dean cycle in the set's very awkward, because you want to be able to play both sides together because they both work well together. Like, you would want to play one into the other, and you can't do that in Commander because of the singleton rule. So maybe they're, you know, but at the same time, most of these, I don't see them being played in Standard or anywhere else either. So it's a very awkward position to be in because, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to, like, try and build a deck based around, like, blinking or bouncing, you know, one side of your hand and getting the other? Especially in colors like, you know, the Orzhov pair or the Boros pair or whatever, where you can't do that.
Yeah, this just feels like a lot of work. It feels like a lot of work for not a lot of reward. And it, I mean, could be fun and funky, but I'm not sure it's good. All right, moving on. Radiant Performer. This got my attention because this feels like it's absolutely broken. Three red, Human Wizard, flash, 2/2. And this is the part that feels gross. When Radiant Performer enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, choose target spell or ability that targets only a single permanent or player. Copy that spell or ability for each other permanent or player that spell or ability could target. Each copy targets a different one of those permanents and players. So does this plus Stone Rain equal Armageddon?
It does, yeah. This is actually literally the card radiate on a creature.
Jesus.
I've always wanted to be really chaotic and cast a Chaos Warp and radiate it.
Well, this one actually came, like, I actually thought of that. I'm like, Chaos Warp plus this sounds just redonkulous.
Yeah.
But it could be, it could also just be like you cast like Dark Banishing on a bunch of things. The next thing you know, like, flash this thing in and kill a million things. So, yeah. The next question is this, does this thing, this is like the Magecraft trigger is going totally haywire, correct?
Yes, this would cause so many Magecraft triggers, it's ridiculous. This is definitely Zada, another best friend, new best friend for Zada and Feather Tex.
Yeah, oh, wow, yes. Hadn't quite thought. Okay, so let's play the little game here. So let's say you have Zada on the battlefield, and you have some number of derpy tokens. You target Zada with like Titan Strength, right? And then you flash this in. Am I getting it twice? That effect on two occasions down here?
Yeah, because Zada says that whenever you cast an instant sorcery spell, it targets only Zada. And the original copy would only target only Zada. Because it's not a copy of the original spell. And you're going to copy that. And then you would still have that target Zada. So all those triggers would go on the stack.
Right.
And then you flash in the this creature here, or radiate, or the radiate creature. And then you would copy that spell targeting Zada. And that spell would target each permanent that you control as well.
That sounds like fun. Nothing like taking your derpy goblins and turning them into, like, you know, seven power creatures that are going to attack for a pile. So sounds good. I like it. It feels like a mean card.
There's definitely a lot of potential for abuse there, and accidental abuse of that. Like, that's one of those cards, like, someone does something, you're like, oh, this is going to be funny. And then they do it, and everyone at the table groans. And it really wasn't that funny. It was just annoying.
Yeah, no. All right, and then last but not least, we put one of the Planeswalkers. We have Kasmina Enigma Sage. Let's have a look at what Kasmina says. All right, so one blue green for legendary creature, legendary Planeswalker Kasmina, loyalty, 2 starting loyalty. And a +2 of scrying. Oh, sorry, missed the static. Each other planeswalker you control has the loyalty abilities of Kasmina. Plus 2, scry 1, minus X, create a 0/0 green and blue fractal token. Put X +1/+1 counters on it, or X is the number of loyalty cards you removed. And then minus 8, search your library for an instant or sorcery card that shares a color with this planeswalker. Exile that card that you shuffle. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Okay. The first question, I think, like, this really does work with the War of the Spark planeswalkers, that now they have a plus, correct?
Yeah.
So I can up Narset and keep her around longer.
Yeah, that is very interesting. That's very interesting.
That's filthy is what that means. Because now Narset's going to stick around longer and deny everybody cards. Everyone's going to cry. Okay, so I guess my next question is this. Like, do you have a way to remind players in a way that's appropriate that, you know, that the abilities of their planeswalker have changed because they had now absorbed this ability from Kasmina that, you know, they may not have had previously?
I don't have any particular good way. Like, I would say pen and paper again, but that's a lot of text to write. I mean, you could shortcut it, and you could just put the loyalty cost of the abilities on there. That way you have those there, you're not trying to shuffle around. I think it probably won't be a problem unless you play this in the Super Friends deck, which is probably the only place this is honestly going to pop up at.
Yeah.
And in which case, well, you deserve that for playing Super Friends, but I kid. I actually am only half kidding. But
those attracts to Super Friend decks are still a thing, and they're running around, and now they've got a new best friend, so.
Now they have a new best friend. God, I love giving redundancy to decks that are very redundant.
Yeah, no. So my last question, I think, as it pertains to Kasmina, is that minus 8, which feels like a really long way off. But anyway, minus 8, search your library for an instant or sorcery. So I need to find a blue or a green instant or sorcery that shares a color with this planeswalker. And then exile the card that you shuffle. So, like, there's nothing stopping me from going to get Enter the Infinite or Tooth and Nail or any of the other really degenerate, like, single card things that just go and tutor up dumb stuff.
Yeah, no, nothing is stopping me from doing that. I imagine people that are playing Kasmina are probably going to be looking for stuff like Expropriate or, like you said, Tooth and Nail, stuff that's going to end the game on the spot. If you get to Ultimate for Planeswalker, but I mean, Kasmina Simic, she's probably going to be seen playing Super Friends for people playing Doubling Season and all those kind of effects anyway, to where you're going to try to proliferate and get to that ultimate very fast. So she's definitely something that, when she comes down, has to be taken off the table in decks that she's going to be played in.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're not letting this one stick around, because that minus 8 is like code for you're losing the game. Because I imagine, like, if you can get to that minus 8, like, that feels like Enter the Infinite, play Thassa's Oracle, game over. It's kind of how I think that one's going.
Yeah, definitely.
like, why would you mess around with Expropriate when you can just go Enter the Infinite and play the Thassa's Oracle? I'm like, meh, all right. Like,
yeah, you can also do that as well.
Yeah. Now, could they counter that spell that you're trying to cast?
Absolutely, yeah, because you are casting that card. Even though you're casting it from exile, because it says you exile that card in the shuffle, you may cast a card, so you are casting it, so you can target the counterspell like you would any other.
Swan song! Yeah, okay, good. All right. Well, I'm sorry. like, if you're gonna get the minus 8, you're going to do something disgusting. I may as well try and do Fight Dirty and Swan Song that fancy spell you're getting rid of. Anyway,
I'm just gonna get that opportunity to disallow. I want to see more people playing disallow that counters, you know, activate and trigger abilities or regular spell for 3 mana. More people should be playing it, because activate abilities are probably the hardest thing to stop a commander.
Oh yeah, like they're it's brutal. Like disallow is Only seven, getting close to $7 at this point. So
it's not cheap. Gotten up a little
So anyway, all right. All right. Well, thank you very much. So we don't have a deck this week, folks, because we've been talking on a lot about the cards here. And I picked a dozen. I stopped at a dozen. I probably could have picked another five or six because there's a lot of peculiar cards in the set. So anyway, thank you very much, Chris, for coming and joining us tonight. Very helpful. Hopefully the audience, you guys have taken some new information from here. In amidst our stories and our rants and everything else that we shared, and are going to go forth and do terrible things with these cards to your opponents, like Radiant performing all their lands with Stone Rain. Go forth, folks. Go forth and bring forth the salty tears. Bring forth the salty tears.
Land is such a spell, literally a grain of salt.
Yeah. just sprinkle that on the table. Just get the table salt. Just flick that around. All right. All right. So as a reminder, folks, we have a giveaway still that's going to be, you still have a few more days to enter in it. As a thank you to our listeners for getting over the 60th episode. So we are now episode 62. We're giving away a mystery booster pack complete with all the goodies inside it. I've got it over here right by my desk. If you listen to the crinkling of the, there it is. Yeah. So to enter is very simple. When I post the link to the show on Twitter, you need to do the following thing. You need to like the show, you need to retweet the show, and include the hashtag EpicEXPCast. Very simple. And we're going to be accepting entries up until the 18th of April and announcing the winner of our show, of that pack on the cast the week of April the 19th. So you have one more week to get your name in there just about and get your name in the draw. So please do not shy away. Come and get yourself a free pack of some mystery boosters. That's going to wrap up this week's show. And big thank you to Chris for joining us tonight. Chris, if people wanted to reach out to you on the internet, ask you further follow-up questions, how would someone get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you can find me at Kelsen Gaming on Twitter. That's my main source where you can find me at, interaction with the Magic community. I'm also Kelsen Gaming on Twitch and YouTube, and Kelsen on MTG Nexus, where I mostly go for commander discussion on the forum board there for a longer forum writing. But if you have any questions or anything, feel free to reach out, give me a tag or a holler, and I'll be glad to do what I can to answer and help.
Perfect. Thank you so very much. If you want to reach out to us here on the show, we'd love to get feedback from you guys, the audience, to make our show a little bit better. So you can reach out to us at our email account, which is theepicexperimentpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to find us on Twitter, we are the @epicexpcast. Don't worry, both of those are going to be in the show notes, so you guys can find those quickly. So if you want to leave a question, you want to ask, leave a comment, or just generally follow along what we're doing and find out what we're brewing next, that'd be awesome. If you want to find any of our decks that we've brewed, you can go find them on moxfield.com. Use the search up the username The Epic Experiment Podcast, and you're going to find all sorts of things there. My son has been real big into Brawl, and so I've been brewing Brawl decks like nobody's business recently. Mm-hmm. So Brawl is a big deal. So yeah. And then, of course, if whatever platform you're listening to us, whether it's iTunes or Google Podcasts or one of the other many platforms that are out there, by all means, please go along and like and follow, subscribe, you know, all the good stuff, leave a positive review, whatever you got to do to get the word out there that we are here each and every week talking Commander with you guys. We'd love to hear from you. All right. So next week, we'll be back. We're probably talking some more Strixhaven because stuff just came out. We may be talking about some early performing cards and what they might offer us as Commander players, but that's for next week. This is the Epic Experiment Podcast, signing off, wishing you all the best wherever you may play Flanagan. Thanks very much, everybody. Take care. Have a great week. We'll talk to you later.